Chapter 2. Terra, the Imperial Palace. The Orc Moon attacked Terra with its presence. It was blockaded and nothing could emerge, yet its reality alone was enough. It orbited the planet, renewing fear across the globe as the people turned unwilling eyes up to witness every moonrise. And the High Lords dithered. The High Lords schemed. At the sight of them, gathered on their dais, Corlan's cheek muscles twitched with contempt and anger. As he walked into the great chamber, the Imperial Fist's boots crunched on the powdered marble fallen from the ceiling. Every time he entered the chamber, he saw less of the space's glory and more of the damage. It was no less a symbol of the state of the Imperium than it had ever been. Friezes were cracked. The rubble of the collapsed seating tiers had not been cleared away. The fractures in the dome turned the fresco of the Great Crusade into a bitter satire. The damage to the huge statue of Rogel Dorn was minimal. The Primarch was unbowed. He gazed down on the High Lord's dais, and Corland knew he read disgust in the lines of his face and in the implacable eyes. How could the Praetorian not be dismayed by what the High Lords of Terra had become? Corland shared that disgust, but he also shared in the shame. By ousting the Lord Gilliman, Udin MacDudo, and becoming Lord Commander of the Imperium in his place, Corland had erased the distance between himself and the High Lords. He was of their number now. Their failures were his too, compounding his others. The Imperial Fists, gone except for himself, and yes, he had acted. Yes, he had united the successor chapters. Yes, the Sons of Dawn once again stood on the ramparts of the Imperial Palace. But to what end? The Orc Moon's tumorous presence was still in the sky, a perpetual reminder of the beast that was bleeding the Imperium. The Council was as fractious as ever, and now, instead of progress towards even a hint of a way of moving against the Orcs, the fault lines in the Imperium were growing into chasms. A poor showing. And he had turned the running of the blockade over to the Imperial Navy. The move was necessary. The last wall could not be held in one place, unable to turn where the war called. Even so, the decision felt like a bad one. Corland mounted the dais and stopped before Kubik. The Fabricator General of the Adeptus Mechanicus was seated. He did not rise. His optics hummed as they adjusted to Corland's proximity. "There has been an astropathic message from Mars," Corland said. He held a strip of vellum before Kubik. "Fighting has broken out. But I expect you knew that. The result was calculated at a high level of probability," Kubik answered. His manted limbs unfolded, long metallic fingers taking the parchment. He examined it with little interest before returning it to Corland.
"You are reporting the expected, Lord Commander."
The others in the room were less sanguine.
"How bad is it?"
asked Draken Vangerich, the Grand Master of the Officio Assassinorum. Most of the people in the chamber inspired Corland with contempt, but Vangerich was an exception. If he had been no more successful than Corland in forcing a consistent, successful defence against the Greenskins out of the Council, his efforts had been heroic. Corland respected him. He was wary of the man, but he trusted his wisdom.
"I have no details yet," Corland said. "I'm waiting on the arrival of Vox transmissions." "Mars is currently 14.2 light minutes from Terra," said Kubik.
"Yes,"
Corland rounded on the Fabricator General again. "How much damage will be done in the time it takes for new orders to be sent and received?"
If Kubik was bothered by the implications, he gave no sign.
"You have sent armed troops onto the sacred ground of Mars," he said. "Your losses are regrettable."
"Regrettable?"
Tobris Eckarth shouted. The Master of the Administratum sounded querulous rather than forceful. His outrage was tinged with panic.
"None of the other chapters of the Adeptus Astartes have seen fit to trouble themselves with Terra."
"The Orc attacks are occurring throughout the Imperium,"
Vangerich interrupted, his tone both grim and calm.
"We have reports of the Ultramarines engaging another attack moon over Tarentus. The Blood Angels..."
"I don't care about Tarentus,"
spit flew from Eckarth's lips.
I care about Terra. And where are our space marines? They're battling the Adeptus Mechanicus. That is not regrettable. It is catastrophic. Is this what you call leadership? He demanded of Corland. You have led us into civil war.
Ecclesiarch Mesring gasped. Inquisitorial representative Lastan Nemegium Veritas rose from his seat.
Do not use those words again, he hissed at Eckhart.
Corland had difficulty gauging Veritas's age, but he was old, his body withered inside the bulk of his power armor. His movements had energy, though, and Eckhart recoiled, leaning back as if he could push himself through his throne and away from the Inquisitor.
The Imperium will never know civil war again, Veritas said.
His voice was calm, measured, yet it cut the air with claws.
That is impermissible. To imagine otherwise is heresy.
Mesring breathed in sharply again. Cultural memories 1,000 years old pressed in on the great chamber, casting long shadows. Trembling, Eckhart said,
Then what is it?
Corland was surprised. The Administratum Lord found the courage to push back even that much against Veritas.
It is something that ends now, Corland said.
He was still facing Kubik.
It is a skirmish, said Kubik. It will end soon.
The mechanical buzz of his voice was without intonation. He might as well have been a servitor reporting data.
What will you do? He asked Corland. I do not think you will continue to send troops after the current contingent is rendered non-viable.
You have little faith in the Adeptus Astartes, Corland said. You think you know how this struggle will end. You are wrong.
The arithmetic is beyond challenge. One company against an entire planet.
Corland shook his head.
Fabricator General Kubik, he said. Planets have fallen to a single company before. Do not mistake this for a skirmish.
He looked at Eckhart.
And it is not a civil war.
He paused. He stopped himself before he gave in to his anger. He would have liked to drag Kubik off his seat and batter the insectoid priest. He would have liked to force compliance. There was no telling how much harm the Adeptus Mechanicus had done already with the secrets it was fighting so hard to keep. But such actions would be futile, and they would ensure an even greater tragedy on Mars.
Fabricator General, he said, calm now, are you still a High Lord of the Imperium?
Brother Skouris came apart. He was a few meters to Thane's left. As Thane tried to clear his eyes and head, he had a vague impression of lunging, skeletal shadows that seemed to have emerged from the air itself. They wielded blades and claws, and they cut through Skouris's armor as if it too were a shadow. Skouris's arms fell to the ground, blood sprayed from his gorget. Up and down the line of the Fist's exemplar, vitae jetted in powerful fountains, the massive hearts of the Adeptus Astartes warrior pumping blood far into the air. It misted the atmosphere of the room. Thane's vision split, doubled, blurred. He made out a line of hostiles approaching from the far end of the room. There were flashes from gun muzzles and projectiles slammed into Thane's chest plate. They hit with the stopping power of heavy stubbers, and everywhere there were the rapid shadows of the enemy already upon the Fist's exemplar. The vox was a ringing howl. Communication was impossible. Defense and retaliation were not. Thane fired, sweeping his bolter in a wide parabola before him. He stepped backwards. He could not trust his agonized senses. He could trust his brothers. Through the static came the heavy pounding of bolters. Thane's shoulders locked with his brothers. The Fist's exemplar formed a circle, striking back with a devastating volley. Shells punched into the walls of the Manufactorium, chewing through the shadows and the advancing foe. Rockets hit the line. The Space Marines struck back at stealth with overwhelming brute force. The white noise began to break down as the beings generating it were annihilated. Thane's vision cleared. He saw the broken line of the Sicarian infiltrators. With their hemispherical skulls, atop bodies whose limbs were narrow articulations long since absent of flesh, they were scarabs of war. They still came forwards, firing stub carbines, broadcasting neurostatic waves, but the cumulative strength of the neurostatic assault was no longer enough. The gen-hanced senses of the Adeptus Astartes magnified the damage of the wave. They also adapted faster. The lethal shadows, too, now had shape. Rust stalkers. The Skitarii assassins had the same slender build as the infiltrators. They moved like razors. At close quarters, their transonic blades sliced through ceramite as easily as flesh. Unlike the infiltrators, the hum they broadcast rode up and down the frequencies, finding the vibrations to slip through the molecules of armor and bone. But they had to get close. The Fist's exemplar pushed the Skitarii back with a mass-reactive storm. Enemy bodies burst into shrapnel. Mechanicus warriors disintegrated. Shapes fell to the ground. Shapes that looked like warped metallic ruin, and yet they bled.
"Through them now!"
Thane yelled. He jogged forwards again, still shoulder to shoulder with his brothers. The Fist's exemplar became their name incarnate, a massive ceramite fist rushing into the foe, shattering the advance. Infiltrator rounds cracked Thane's breastplate. He was running through hammer blows, but his own blows were harder. His force was unstoppable. Half-molten slag cracked and shifted and gave way beneath his heavy steps, and his boots sank into viscous heat. But he kept his footing. He kept his momentum. The exemplars were a single entity, a battering ram come to shatter the enemy line. More infiltrators fell. The stiletto jabbed to Thane's forehead, and the suboral sapping of his spirit itself faded. The Vox sputtered back to life with the roar of the Space Marine's anger. The rust stalkers closed with them, needling in like filaments to a magnet. Some of them danced between the shells, some of them struck home with their blades. Thane heard brothers' snarls cut short. He also heard high-pitched bursts of squealing by Narek as the assassins were taken apart by retaliatory fire. Thane hurled a frag grenade. The Skitarii had little flesh for the shrapnel to pierce, but the blast fountained metal over them, melting joints and incinerating circuits. A rust stalker leapt in front of him, slashing at his helmet with its cord claw. He jerked his head back, the claws scraped across his grill. With his right arm, he swung his chainsword diagonally down through the assassin's neck, cutting through cables. It severed a cybernetic spine. The rust stalker's head flew off, and Thane trampled over the body. The Fist's exemplar collided with the infiltrators. They attacked with fury and with sheer mass, turning the Sicarians into scrap metal. The remaining rust stalkers retreated, vanishing back into the shadows.
"Are you still holding, Thamarius?"
Thane voxed.
"Barely," the sergeant answered. He sounded winded. "Still not through the gate. We are almost with you."
There was a doorway ahead, beyond it a narrow corridor and the Martian daylight. The end of the Manufactorium and a short run to the rear of the Mechanicus lines and the Tharsis Gate. The huge fist kept moving.
"Our losses," Seven Galliax began,
"are known and registered,"
Van Auken interrupted.
"We have been unable to stop the Adeptus Astartes advance through the Dolentes complex."
"We are fully aware."
Van Auken's optics skipped from vidscreen to vidscreen, processing the unfolding disaster. Extrapolated results were even grimmer. He had to shut the conflict down and do it quickly. The long-term consequences were as uncertain as the near-future ones were definite. They were also coming, no matter what steps he took to stop the Fist's exemplar. There was no peace to preserve now. The political ramifications were beyond his concern. He was sending constant updates to Terra for the use of the Fabricator General, but whatever Kubik decided had no bearing on the immediate situation.
"Reinforcements are arriving," Van Auken told Seven Galliax. "Expect significant structural and personnel impacts."
"Acknowledged. We are the machine. Let it be inevitable and manifest."
Short-term collateral losses to the Mechanicus were regrettable. They were also ongoing. The war had to be stopped by a massive concentration of force. Sufficient escalation would stop uncontrollable escalation. There was pure certainty in the move he had to make. Its success was less certain. He watched the vidscreens, processing the data of the war he was trying to stop. He realized he was experiencing desperation.
"Your query's answer is self-evident," Kubik said. "If I were not a High Lord, I would not be present. We would not be having this conversation."
The Fabricator General's answer was somewhere between being literal in the most mechanistic sense and an equivocation. Courland hoped Kubik's cold evasion was a sign of uncertainty. "You still have nerves in there," Courland thought. "I think I struck one." He pressed harder.
"Your actions force my question. You have every right and duty to act in the defense of Mars, but not at the expense of the Imperium. We are not two powers, we are one. Or are you really contemplating secession?"
"The speculation is absurd," Kubik said.
Courland did not expect emotion in Kubik's voice, so he was not surprised by the flat absence of outrage or passion. What surprised him was the momentary pause. A single metallic finger tapped once again against the right arm of the throne. Something Courland had said had jolted the Fabricator General. He had hit too close to home. Secession? The Mechanicus wouldn't be that mad. And if they were?
Courland leaned closer to Kubik. "What do you think is happening on Mars?" he asked. "What do you think will be the consequences of the path you have chosen?"
"The Mechanicus does not walk this path alone, Lord Commander. You are the one who sent an armed force to Mars."
"You forced my choice, Fabricator General Kubik. There is war on Mars as we have this debate. Even now, the damage must be considerable. It will be worse. If there is no ceasefire, the struggle will continue until there is victory. Think of the cost. Think how far the consequences will reach. Perhaps this will not be civil war."
He shot a glance at Veritas, who glowered but kept silent.
"But Mars will be weakened. The Imperium will be weakened. Is that your desire? How much destruction will you embrace?"
No answer from Kubik, except in the tapping of his finger. It marked time. Each click of metal on metal, the passing of another second, another moment lost to the cascading destruction. Messengers burst into the great chamber from separate doors. One ran straight for Courland. The other was a Mechanicus acolyte. Kubik's finger stopped tapping. His telescoping optics flicked from the approaching acolyte and back to Courland. They waited in silence for the news. More moments lost. A few meters from the exit of the corridor, Thane halted. At the same instant, Thamarius voxed,
"Chapter Master, Mechanicus reinforcements!"
"I see them, Brother Sergeant."
Dune crawlers, squadron after squadron of them, a swarm of massive arachnid walkers, moving in with a ponderous scuttle into the port area. Their eradication beamers were swinging towards the Manufactorium.
"They will leave nothing but a crater," said Aloysian.
Van Auken's voice resounded across the battlefield.
"Adeptus Astartes, surrender immediately. You have 30 seconds.
Thane gestured the company back. He opened a channel to the Alcazar remembered.
"Shipmaster," he said, "I need a single bombardment cannon salvo with immediate effect at these coordinates."
The messages were subliminal reports. As Courland learned the full details of the battle's beginning, he received word on the vox of another astropathic communication. It was one whose translation had posed no difficulty. There had been too much urgency in the signal from the choir aboard the Alcazar remembered, the message too brief and simple to permit misunderstanding.
"An orbital attack has begun," Courland said.
Kubik rose.
"End it,"
he demanded.
"That lies with you," Courland responded.
Imperial Fist and Fabricator General faced each other. The seconds ticked by in silence. The rest of the High Lords watched and said nothing. Hundreds of millions of kilometers away, destruction rained from the Martian skies. The dune crawlers turned their beams on the Manufactorium. The Fist's exemplar retreated from the disintegrating collapse. Walls evaporated behind them. The upper floors plummeted. The rubble that fell through the beams vanished. Tons of rockcrete and iron and plasteel made it through. Thane crouched against the side wall as slabs came down at an angle. Ruin pressed down on the company. He pushed upwards, straining against the weight that sought to crush him. The pressure grew as more and more of the upper structure fell.
"Stand fast, brothers," he called, shouting over thunder. "Our retaliation approaches."
"It's getting lighter," Cahagnis said.
"Do not rejoice,"
Aloysian warned. The shrieking hum of the eradicator beams drew nearer. They were stripping away the layers of rubble. Soon there would be no shelter. Daylight appeared over Thane's head. He roared and turned to face the Mechanicus armor. And so he was in time to see the streak from the sky. The bombardment cannon's shot struck the center of the square of the Infinite Reach. Auto-senses shutting out the glare, Thane crouched in the vanishing ruins. The blast was light and fire and the concentrated wind of a thousand hurricanes. It blew over the Fist's exemplar, who sank into their positions, clutching shattered foundations. Torn and burned fragments of the dune crawlers flew overhead, leaves in the wind. The wind still blowing, the glare barely faded, Thane called the charge. Smoke and dust everywhere. In the avenue, the heavy armor struggle continued, but the Mechanicus forces, closer to the blast, had been decimated. The Space Marine tanks gained ground. Before the Tharsis Gate, there was now a wasteland with a crater a dozen meters deep at its center. Its slopes were a landscape of unrecognizable metal fragments and broken stone.
"Thamarius," Thane called as the Fist's exemplar descended the slope.
"Still here, Chapter Master? Just?"
"Are you in?"
"Almost."
Waylon Kale broke in.
"Chapter Master," said the shipmaster,
"we are under attack."
"How many Mechanicus vessels?"
"Many."
Courland took a step back from Kubik. He spread his arms, taking in the damage to the great chamber.
"Is this what we're coming to?" he asked. "Will we turn the Imperium into a broken, fractured, divided shadow of what it should be? Is this how we honor the Emperor?"
He filled his lungs with air. He filled his being with righteous anger. He bellowed his denial and his loyalty in a single word.
"No!"
The shout reverberated across the chamber. The High Lords looked at him in silence. He saw terror in some, shame in others. Vangarich gave a slow nod of approval. Something glimmered in Veritas's eyes, and Courland had the impression it was something like hope. He was surprised to see the old Inquisitor was still capable of the emotion. Kubik was unreadable. He had no face in the human sense. He was perfectly still. "I have your attention," Courland thought. He spoke to the High Lords, his voice carried to the seating tiers, to the spectators who still came to the battered room. If the minor lords and functionaries were still jockeying for political favor, their efforts must have been the result of habit rather than belief by this point. Their numbers were greatly reduced. Many had died in the Proletarian Crusade. Others had been too terrified to return in the wake of Eldar and Orcs being present so deep in the heart of the Imperial Palace. Courland spoke to be heard by all, but most of all, he spoke to Kubik.
"The Imperium is tested, as it has not been since the Emperor ascended to the Golden Throne," he said. "If we fail this test, we fail through disunity. We fail the trust the Emperor has placed in us. If division defeats us, we deserve no better. And if we fall, in the name of what? I stand for terror, and I stand for Mars. Because I stand for the Emperor, I stand for the Imperium. I will walk the ramparts of the galaxy. I will repel all enemies. I know my duty."
He dropped his voice so that only Kubik could hear.
"Do you?"
The Fist's exemplar melted their way through the final meters of steel, and the Tharsis Gate was breached at last. The passage was just wide and high enough for the Battle Brothers to pass through in single file. To the rear, the tanks had broken the last of the Mechanicus lines and were forming a defensive perimeter around the gate, preserving the egress once Urquidex had been located.
"Taking fire," Kale reported from the Alcazar remembered. "How long can you hold them off while remaining at anchor?" Thane asked, pausing at the entrance to the breach. "As long as you need, Chapter Master."
Kale's answer was an acknowledgement that there was no choice if the mission was to succeed.
"Our thanks, Shipmaster."
A new wave of toxins sounded. The wailing was desperate, the tone final. Standing at Thane's shoulder, Aloysian said,
"They will not let us profane Pavonis Mons. They will destroy the complex with us."
"I hope you're wrong," Thane said.
But as he spoke, immense turrets rose to the east and west, driven upwards by pistons thick as the limbs of titans. They supported eradication beamer macro cannons. With glacial majesty, barrels wider than thunderhawks began to turn and angle downwards. Aloysian was right. The Mechanicus was ready to atomize the invaded quadrants of the Pavonis Mons complex, layer by layer. The Predators and Whirlwinds unleashed salvos of cannon fire and missile flights at the turrets. Void shields flared with the impacts. Thane voxed Kale as he followed Aloysian down the melted tunnel through the gate.
"Shipmaster," he said, "I need an area-wide bombardment."
Thane felt the mission goal recede into the mists of war. Closing in was only ever more terrible destruction.
"Duty,"
Kubik repeated. The Fabricator General spoke slowly, pausing between the syllables as if anatomizing the word. He stood.
"I believe in the honor of the Adeptus Mechanicus," Kurin said. "I believe in its fidelity to the Emperor."
Another silence. Not a total one. Corland listened to the clicks and whirs and electronic humming of Kubik's form. He imagined he was hearing the sounds of indecision, of logic circuits closing to form a pattern of choice. Kubik said,
"Your belief is not misplaced. I am cognizant of all my duties."
His words were as free of human inflection as ever. There was no trace of the organic in their buzzing enunciation. And they were filled with sudden resolution. Kubik turned to the Mechanicus acolyte.
"Priority extremis message. Cease fire."
Corland tapped his vox bead, connecting him to the master of the astropathic choir. It was no longer a question of stopping the war in time. The question was whether there was anything left to stop.
"Target zone acquired," Shipmaster Kale, voxed from the Alcazar, remembered. "Firing on your command."
Beyond the Tharsis Gate, the Fist's exemplar found themselves in a vast structure that was both Hall of Worship to the Omnisire and Pathway Nexus, the Grand Passage of the Fulcrumite. Galleries beyond number rose toward a vault 1,000 meters away. A web of maglev tracks, dozens of levels deep, led away in all directions. The main corridor, wide enough for a phalanx of bane blades to travel down, split in the far distance, with the right-hand branch sloping beneath the surface of Mars. The air was dark with black, oily smoke. The rockcrete arches echoed with a bone-shaking heartbeat of machinery. The sharp, whistling crackle and thunder of energy discharges would have punctured mortal eardrums. The toxins sounded here too, and yet the innumerable servants of the Omnisire continued along their appointed tasks. They moved in their red robes on their insectile limbs, mechadendrites waving, travelling without panic, their goals unaltered by the fates decreed by their superiors. The order to fire caught in Thane's throat. He was about to lay waste to a vast region of Pavonis Mons, the explosive destruction easier for the Fist's exemplar to survive than the absolute surgical scouring of the eradicator beams. And if the attack took out the turrets, the Mechanicus would come back with an even more devastating attack. The conflict was a firestorm. It was nothing he could stop. It had caught the Fist's exemplar and the Adeptus Mechanicus in its consuming winds, and there was nothing anyone on Mars could do to stop it. All they could do was feed it. Fire, he thought. But he hesitated again. In the second he had delayed, The turrets had not fired. The towering walls of the passage were intact. The region had not been stripped down to its component molecules. Someone else was hesitating.
Chapter Master?
Kale asked. The Fist's exemplar pounded down the passage. They had no direction to pursue except down. The war had no direction except more. But there was hesitation. Thane had no choice. He had to seize the advantage before Van Auken did. Before the Mechanicus vessels overwhelmed, the Alcazar remembered.
Fire!
He said. But then Kale was shouting something. It took a few seconds for the words to register.
Astropathic communication, Chapter Master. Immediate ceasefire. Cease fire.
The message Thane had abandoned hope of receiving. The message he wished for, above all others. And for that reason, he had to distrust it.
Authenticated, he said. Authentication in progress.
He must fight until he knew the order truly came from Courland. That was his duty. But Van Auken wasn't firing either. He placed his trust in hope.
Hold fire,
he told Kale.